And before I read the word, I do want to kind of, I think everybody's aware that we've been having a little bit of a parking issue, but one of the things that we're trying to do is see it as an opportunity for us to, well, what does it mean for us to be neighborly? We don't want to just kind of just say, no, you can't park here, get lost. because Jesus might not like that. And we want to kind of just put our best foot forward and say, you know, so it's going to be hard. So it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. There's some things that we want to try to do to try to make it easier. But, you know, consider your struggles part of, you know, what it means for us to be a good church, part of what it means for us to represent who God is on this earth, but particularly in Irvine, in our neighborhood. So. Think about it like that. And so it's a little bit of, you know, you doing a little bit of service, just that bit of inconvenience. So I want to read to you from Isaiah text, Isaiah chapter 9, 1 through 7, very famous passage when it comes to Advent. In our fourth week of Advent, Light of the World is the title of my message. Isaiah chapter 9, 1 through 7, and then I'll also read from John chapter 1, 1 through 5. Isaiah chapter 9. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future, he will honor Galilee of the Gentiles by the way of the sea along the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. And those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as men rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. Amen. So, Esther told me a story about a friend of ours who went shopping with Christmas decorations with his daughters. One of them is a five-year-old daughter, just like we have a five-year-old daughter. And as they went around there, he was astounded by how his daughters, especially the youngest ones, were able to name every single character that they ran into. And they see an entire pull of deers and reindeers and sort of, oh, that's Dancer, that's Prancer, and that's Blitzen, that's Comet. They would go around saying, oh, that's Frosty, that's Buddy the Elf. You know, they knew every single one of these until they came across this character that looked familiar, but they could not remember what the name was. So the daughter, this five-year-old girl, turned to her father and says, what's that guy's name again? And the dad was a little bit chagrined as he said, that would be Jesus. True story. For the gazillionth time, not just this winter, but in your life, you're going to hear a message about the true meaning of Christmas, right? Long time ago, I remember sending a little bit of an email thing to one of my closest friends about just how, you know, hey, this is what I preached on, You know, I talked about the true meaning of Christmas. This was a long, long time ago when I was first starting out, you know, doing these messages on Advent and first learning to preach. And his response back was, how original. I was like, the really sarcastic, how original. I was like, deflated. But for the gazillionth time, you're going to hear, not just today, probably everywhere else as well, tons of articles. If you're ever, you know, wanting to know the true meaning of Christmas, what the true meaning of Christmas is. Because frankly, though, as much as we talk about the true meaning of Christmas, there are a lot of things about this time of the year, all this Christmassy stuff that might include the decorations, that might include the cars, that might include the presents, all of these things that are wonderful and good, that actually distracts us. And that sometimes we do forget what that guy's name is. And we realize, oh, we haven't really talked about that guy for very long, have we? Not very much. I want for us to be aware that there is something in us, in every one of us, let's be honest, that says, I don't need to hear this. I mean, I'm willing to hear it, but I don't really need to hear this. Really, how many of you guys get excited when the preacher goes up and says, we're going to talk about the true meaning of Christmas? You guys go, oh, that's what I really want to hear today? Does that sound like something that's really original to you? No, most of us don't. But the point of Advent is that everyone needs to hear this in order for us to prepare well. Because if you were to ask, here's the thing, if you were to ask anyone and everyone, at least in America, what the true meaning of Christmas is, everyone and everyone would have an opinion, a very strong opinion about what that is. Right? Everyone has a very strong and certain opinion about how Christmas ought to be thought about and how Christmas ought to be celebrated. And we need to go through all that muck. We need to go through some of that. And I'm not saying you need to forget about what everybody else says and just listen to me. That's not what I'm saying. But all of us, including myself, we need to remind ourselves continually, and Advent is indeed that time of the year, to say, what is the true meaning of Christmas? Because we are really forgetful people. We're forgetful people. However many times. If you watch movies or TV shows this time of the year, everyone has an opinion, and you don't have to be a Christian. That's my point. If you're in America, you believe that you have a right to an opinion about what Christmas ought to be because people think this is an American holiday as much, in fact, even more so than it is a Christian holiday. Okay? So if you watch TV shows, whether it's these sitcoms, whether it's like Modern Family or Community or The Office, it always ends with this kind of the zoom out shot, right? You guys are familiar with this. You guys know what I'm talking about. At the very end, they zoom out with everybody at the end of this Christmas episode, kind of like hugging and loving one another and sharing gifts and all this stuff that happened before. They forgive one another, and there's this zoom out shot of everybody laughing or singing a song or something like that, right? So most of the people, if you were to ask them, what is the true meaning of Christmas, they would have a very strong opinion and say, it's about people. It's about family and friends getting together and celebrating life. That's what it is. It's about people getting together and say, love will triumph over all. I was listening to a radio show, and they had an atheist talk about Christmas. And now they said, you know, that's fine, but, you know, people ought to really remember what Christmas is, really, it's about is, it's actually a celebration of winter solstice. Because if you think about it, in most parts of the world, it's the coldest time of the year, it's the darkest time of the year, the days are the shortest, so it would be a time in which people would gather together traditionally, inside, huddled together, and they would be light and warmth to each other in a dark and a cold world. And if we remember that, then we could celebrate, this is an atheist speaking, Then we could celebrate Christmas rightly. The message we hear constantly, and some of us, many of us, to a certain degree, have bought into it. The message that we hear constantly during Christmas time is this, that Christmas is that we can make the world a better place. Humankind can save itself if we can only work together, if we are good to each other, peace on earth, goodwill to all mankind. And that could not be the furthest from what the Bible tells us what Christmas is. The message of the scriptures is very clear. The message of the scriptures is that the world cannot save itself. There are lots of problems, but humankind cannot save itself, and that is just reality. Salvation only comes from the Lord. The world is a dark place. So part of Advent is for us to, one of the themes that we have to struggle with is to think about and talk about this darkness. So we want to think a little bit about this darkness. So a message in two parts, to first talk about the darkness, and then the second part is to talk about the light that comes to us, the nature of this light that comes to us. So dark and light. So pretty easy for us to remember, right? So the first thing that I want to talk about is that Christmas, the Bible tells us that Christmas is a dark. Christmas means that the world is a dark place. That's what the Bible tells us. That Christmas means the world is a dark place. I know it seems a little bit contrary, but the Bible is telling us that the world is a dark place, and that's what Christmas means. That's one of the most basic assumptions about what Christmas is. Chapter 9 in Isaiah starts with the word nevertheless. Nevertheless. How many of you guys like using that word in like regular conversation? Start talking. Nevertheless. Most people don't, but you love to write it in like your papers. Whenever you were in school, it was in every single one of your papers, school papers. Trust me, it is. Look back, okay? Nevertheless, it seems like it's a long word, but it's actually three short words put together. What that means is that we have to look back to chapter 8 to see what was going on. And this is what we read at the end of chapter 8. This is verse 21. It says, distressed and hungry, they will roam through the land. When they are famished, they will become enraged. And looking upward, they will curse their king and their God. Then they will look toward the earth and see only distress and darkness and fearful gloom, and they will be thrust into utter darkness. Nevertheless, that's where the nevertheless comes in. After that, it's a dark, dark place. There's lots of problems in this world. The Israelites are being crushed by famine and crushed by all sorts of social and political problems. And they look to answers. They look for answers everywhere. Earlier on in chapter 8, it says they actually look to mediums and spiritualists, the wisest people that they could think of in their time. They look to their king. They look to their religion. And they're trying to find their answer to their problems. And the more they look at their earth, the more they see darkness. And it is into this dark world that Isaiah says in chapter 9, nevertheless, there, on those living in the land of the shadow of death, it says, a light has dawned. There is a light, but it is not a light that we have found, we have come up with, we have developed, we have thought up, but it is a light that has dawned upon us. It's not of our making. It's not us trying to create light out of the darkness. But light enters into this dark, dark world. So the first thing we have to remember we have to start with is that Christmas reminds us that we are living in a dark world. The world is a very dark place. Now, this is right about the time in most sermons where you would expect the pastor to say something like, I was reading through the newspaper this week. I was reading through Google News, and I saw these dark, dark things that was happening. I want to share with you some awful things about about the darkness that I've read about and that's happening in the world. And this is true, but I think it has a tendency to make us think that the darkness is mainly about the outside, and we have to be protected from it and the inside. The darkness is everything that's out there, but inside we have to huddle ourselves against the dark. And like we're falling into that false understanding of Christmas. You guys get me? And not that it isn't dark out there as well, but I want to talk about the darkness that is here in our hearts. I want to focus on that a little bit right now. You guys have heard us talk about this study a little while back. There was they asked students of the Harvard Business School, everything else being same, they asked, which option would you choose? Would you choose option A, you were to make $50,000 a year, and everybody else makes $25,000 a year, or option B, you would make $100,000 a year, but everybody else would make $200,000 a year? What do you think the majority of these very smart Harvard Business School students did? They chose option A. That's the human heart. Majority of us are willing to take a 50% pay cut just to feel superior to other people in order to get other people to envy us. We walk in darkness. How many of you guys can relate to that? How many of you say, yeah? How many of you guys would say, I would have chosen option B for sure? Come on, let's be honest. There is darkness in our hearts, and most of the time it is of the pettiest kind. It is of the pettiest kind. No one I know in the world thinks they're petty. We don't think we're petty. If you think other people's actions are petty. But we don't think we're very petty. But oftentimes, our darkness is of the pettiest kind. I said one time, we say, you know, we like to think that our darkness, you know, we might be dark, but we want to be like dark, like the dark night, dark. You know, seek vengeance for greater good. You know, I'm willing to do whatever it takes for so that good things. You know, I want to be like Robin Hood. I want to be like the Dark Knight. And we think that sort of darkness is in our hearts. It's like, no, I'm sorry to say that we're much more so of the petty dark kind. Airlines know that when their planes are delayed, they can expect a repercussion from the travelers. Okay? I was reading this book called Blind Spot, and this is one of the stories that it tells us. And it tells us, behavioral economists and psychologists tell us that we're blind. Human beings are so blind to how people all the time, we fail to live up to our own standards of what's good behavior, of our own levels of morality. And airlines know this about people. Airlines know how petty people can be. They can expect a repercussion from the passengers when something wrong happens, when the plane is delayed. You want to know how? Not so much in the future business, although I'm sure that happens too. I'm sure, you know, you're late long enough. But they know that the first way in which travelers show their displeasure with an airline is by leaving a mess. That's you. That's me. Okay? We're late to a destination, or they run out of chicken and you have to eat turkey, you wind up having to eat the kosher meal or whatever. You, instead of using napkins, you use the chairs around you. You leave, instead of throwing away the garbage when the flight attendant comes around, you shove it into the back seat. This is what people do. Airlines know this. And all of us are going, not me. again, maybe not you in this specific situation, but certainly we're not as aware of how petty we really are. We're not that much better, I think, in the church either. I mean, just in case you're thinking, well, that's just travelers, that's just pagans, you know, we're Christians, we're lovely, wonderful people. You know, a pastor says something that people don't like, or listen, I am very conscious of how petty people can be as a pastor. If they don't like something I say, I know how people, how petty people can be toward pastors. And, you know, first line that comes out is, oh, he calls himself a pastor. You know. Here's what I'm not so aware of. How petty I can be. Here's what I do not dwell upon enough. How petty I can be when somebody says something I don't like. We can pick on everybody else's pettiness towards me. But the real darkness is that we're so completely oblivious to our own pettiness to others. This is darkness. This is darkness in me. This is darkness in you. There is deceit in me. There is pettiness in me. There's jealousy. There's envy. There's coveting in my heart. The Christmas message is a message of unparalleled hope. But Christmas is telling something basic about the world and your own heart and your own mind that is both sobering and offensive. Jesus is so bright. His light is brighter in one sense, and I want to be careful theologically. Jesus' light is in one sense brighter than it has to be because we are so dark. We are so dark. Now, once you come to the realization that the world is a dark place, what can you do? What can you do? What are your options? Well, I think most of us, many people, whether it's in the church or outside of the church even, will say something like, you know, if the world is such a dark place, the best thing I can do is, you know, I'm just going to light my candle as best as I can. And this is what's, you know, I'm going to light my candle. At least it won't be dark right here. You know, you want to be like that kid running around on the beach, throwing the starfish back in. And somebody asks, hey, kid, there's no way that you're going to save all the starfish. And you want to be that kid who says, I saved this one. You know? And we might think that's what Christmas is. Like, I'm going to be a light. This is what I'm being called to light my candle. And this is what we do when we gather together for Christmas Eve services, light our candles, and we say, we're going to be light, and together, we will create a fire. I mean, we'll create a bigger fire, bigger light, and together we can do something about the darkness. We can light this room. Now, if that's what you think Christmas is telling us to do, then I'm again, sorry to say, that could not be furthest from what Christmas is actually about. I told the story a while back about being part of a Christmas Eve service, a candlelight service. And we did exactly that. Many of you do that and light candles at Christmas Eve services. You have grown up doing that. And it's a wonderful thing. It's a beautiful thing. I'm not knocking that. The next time we do that, please don't remember this story. We lit our candles and it was just, you know, everybody's faces. You know, you light the candle and you could see the person's face. And it was like this beautiful thing. We had several hundred people there. And then we said, we're going to walk out into the darkness, and we're going to light the world. We're going to become light. And we walked out, and it was this windy, blustering Christmas Eve. And as soon as we walked out, hundreds of candlelights went. This is one of those things. It's called a bad illustration, Pastor. It almost went the other way, but in fact, it illustrates a very important truth. If we think that's what we're called to do. If we think that's the point of Christmas, there's not enough light. As much as you might muster up your own candles, there will never be enough light to chase away the darkness. At Christmas Eve, at Christmas time, when we light the candles, that candle is not a representation of our own good deeds, but it's that candle is a reminder that the only way in which we have this light is if someone comes to us and becomes light for us in our dark world. If the world is dependent upon us, in its present darkness, upon my candle, our candles combined, then the world is doomed to eternal darkness. And that's the message. The Christmas message is this, that unless God has sent the Son into the world, there is no light in the world. There is no light in any other place. And folks, that is offensive. But that doesn't mean that we just sit on our hands and do nothing and say, well, God's light will do everything. As Christians, what we do is we look darkness square in its eyes, in its dark eyes. And then we bring Christ's light. We let Christ's unflickering light be strength and be present in places that needs it. You know, Christian faith is never to say, you know, it's not so bad when we see darkness, when we see difficulties, when we see suffering, when we see pain. A Christian faith is not optimism. Christian faith is not just to kind of just try to make things seem better and say, hey, everything will be fine, everything will be fine. Rather to say, nevertheless, everything is dark, but nevertheless, there is reason for hope. Because that reason for hope is not dependent upon me, but a reason for hope comes from God Himself. So one of the things that I want to challenge you guys right now as we talk about the darkness is, are there any of you who try to deal with your problems in the non-Christian way, which is to kind of deny the darkness, kind of come up with strategies to not look at the darkness square because you're afraid of what it would look like? You're afraid of how it would look if you looked at the darkness square on. Are there any of you who try to deal with your problems with strategies by, I don't know, working out, going out for a run, get drunk, or whatever strategies to continue in your denial about your darkness instead of looking at it square on? Because you would only do that if you were scared of the darkness. And one of the central messages of Christmas is that darkness is real. Nevertheless, there's a powerful hope, more powerful than anything that you can muster up, more powerful than the darkness itself. I have this rather serious-looking, mean-looking scar that some of you guys have... I've showed to many of you guys on my collarbone. It shows through sometimes if I actually wear a tight shirt, not intentionally. My wife will actually, she doesn't like looking at it. She said, why in the world would you make me look at that? You know? And she kind of just, it's like looking at the sun. She can't look at, face it straight on. She sees it through her peripheral vision. Sometimes I think we we approach the pains and sufferings of this life like that. We kind of say, God, why in the world would you make me look at that? And we're in a culture and sort of a place that doesn't like to be reminded of the darkness that's in the world. And everything about our Orange County and Irvine and California and United States compounds the message and says, oh, why in the world would you make me look at that? Why in the world would you make me look at that? And I think Christians were called to a calling of looking squarely into the darkness and bringing hope, not of your own making, not of your own making, but from outside, from the Lord himself. I think that's what we're called to do. The second point, then. The light. The whole thing that's so weird about how God has sent his son to us is that he sent his son to us in this most unexpected way. As a child in Galilee and Nazareth. God brings light to us in the most unexpected and unlikely ways. Isaiah 9 says, in the past he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, but in the future he will honor Galilee of the Gentiles. Some of you guys will remember that Galilee was a despised region in all of Israel. And especially the town of Nazareth, there was a common saying where people would say, can anything good come out of Nazareth? And we are not so prone to regional stereotypes as much, but there is regional stereotypes to a degree. When Ray was around, I used to call on the fact that he was from Texas. And I said, hey, so how many guns did you have in your truck, you know? Growing up in elementary school. You know, there are regional stereotypes about people in California. There are regional stereotypes about people in New York. And there are certain ways in which, if you're from certain other parts of the country, there's a little bit of embarrassment, or there's a little bit of, apology to say, hey, no. I might be from Oklahoma. But great things happen, and you kind of have to, you know, build up your state, and you talk about all of the wonderful things that happened there and all the famous people that have come from that region. So there's still a bit of regionalism that happens. But the world, especially back then, there was a sense that, yeah, and we still act like this now, that great things don't occur in certain ways. Great things don't occur in the middle of a farm. If that happens, you know, that's completely what's unexpected. You know, great things happen with people who grew up in cultured places with well-manicured parents going through very nice schools and with nice degrees at a certain age. Great things happen to a certain type of people. People from, you know, nowhere do not win Nobel Prizes in chemistry. People from nowhere and do not develop into great people in these situations. And the world thinks it knows how greatness has to occur. And the Bible is telling us, hey, this is exactly the opposite. And the first thing I want to tell you is about the region. Is that he's going to come from Galilee of the Gentiles. And everybody would say, Galilee of the Gentiles? What good thing come out from Nazareth? And then God sends his child, his son, as a little baby to parents, to poor parents, to an unwed mother. And he was laid in a feed trough. That's what a manger is. A feed trough, that where the sheep and the horses, whatever that they eat, they're raised in Nazareth. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? And look at the people who were invited, the famous people that were invited to his first birthday, shepherds, shepherds. Shepherds were of the lowest of the vocations. They were the despised. So despised that if you were to go to a court, the testimony of a shepherd would not be admissible as evidence. Shepherds were known to lie. Shepherds were known to make up stories. Aesop's fable. This is in Greece, right? Boy who cried wolf. What was his profession? This is something that was understood by all ancient people. Shepherds. Shepherds? At your birthday party? There's a foolishness way of God. There's an unexpectedness, completely unexplainable unexpectedness from how God does it. So God says, God makes sure that it is not of any human undertaking, that Christ's greatness is because of who Christ is as the Son of God and nothing else. Not of his position, not of his ranking, not of his education, not of his heritage, not of anything else other than the fact that he's the Son of God. And that also means for us then, that we ought to follow God in this way of foolishness. Some of you will remember when you first became a Christian and you began to do things differently and you actually began to be generous to people, give money to people who asked of you. Some of you guys might remember in a moment of fervor you actually forgave someone. And your love for the Lord, you actually did prioritize serving people ahead of your own climbing of the ladder. Other people getting credit. Some of you guys might remember that time. And what did people say to you? What did people say to you when you turned the other cheek? What did people say to you? I remember doing that. I remember in junior high school, my Christian friends coming up to me and saying, why don't you fight back? Why don't you turn the other cheek? Why don't you plot your vengeance? They didn't use those words exactly, but essentially what people were saying. It's the foolishness. The ways of God is opposite sometimes. Are you afraid, even now, to look like a fool? Because then there's a good chance you may have missed the message of Christmas. If one of the most important things in your life right now is to make sure how you're perceived by others, so that you don't look like a fool, then you may have missed how Jesus came. Not with a glowing light, levitating in a farm somewhere, but rather as a babe to unwed parents. So ultimately, the message of Christmas is that whatever problems I have, whatever darkness there is in the world, will be overcome by the light of Christmas. And when you stake your life on this, you will know great joy. Some of you are trying to just get by on your own strength, on your own ability to be light in your own world of darkness, whatever it is. But you can do so much more. There can be absolute transformation, absolute change. You can change the world with the message of Christmas. If you don't think this way, you're denying the reality of Christmas. One of the things that I would want for you guys to think about throughout this week is to pay attention then to how you are actually living out the true message of Christmas. do you really believe this? Do you really, really believe that in this dark world, that there is hope, and it is not of your own making, of somebody else's making, but something that comes to us, that is discovered, that dawns upon us in the land of shadow of death? Pay attention then to this. Are you a hopeful person then? Do people get more hope when they're around me? Or do they get less? Think about that. That's how you would know whether you have digested the true meaning of Christmas or bought into something else. Do people, when they're around you, do they become more hopeful or do they become less? And do you treat people hopefully? Say, there's hope for you. Or do you treat people like there is no hope for change? There is no hope. I know the way you are. You'll always be like this. Do you always expect that the hope is greater than the darkness? That's what the point is. And do you believe that there is hope for you? For me? Pay attention to this truth as it gets worked out in your life. This is what God can do if we just paid attention to that. Let's pray. I'm going to invite Pastor Sam to come up momentarily as he leads us in a time of prayer as well. But would you consider that very seriously? I'm not asking you to be just a nice person. I'm not asking you to be just a pleasant person. I'm not asking you to just make everybody laugh when you're around them to be the life of the party. I'm asking you, do people see the hope of Christ that is in you? And do you treat others with hope? That might be a good measure, good way for us to understand whether or not we have been dwelling in the true meaning of Christmas, or whether we have settled or have been distracted into thinking about it as something else. Light of the world, you came down. You came down to save us. May we trust in this light.